This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello and welcome to this first Moneybox podcast of 2025. Private school fees rise as they lose their VAT exemption, but how will the change actually affect parents' finances? Bus fares go up 50% in parts of England as the cap on a single fare rises to £3 for millions of journeys. And 'tis the season to be taking things back. What to do when a gift is not just what you always wanted? But first, something that affects us all. Temperatures down, fuel prices up. From New Year's Day, the price cap set by the regulator Ofgem on every unit of electricity and gas we use will mean the cost of heating, washing, cooking for a typical household will rise by just over 1% in the same week that temperatures have fallen below zero. The rise is typically £21 a year to £1,738, but that annual cost is still lower than a year ago, £190 a year lower for a typical household. Many people, though, are still afraid to keep warm at home. Our reporter Dan Whitworth asked people in Hexham, Northumberland, how they're managing their energy bills this year.
Every month it's been going up £60 in the last 3 months because I've had to have my heating on. The electric stayed the same, but the gas has went up massively and I just don't know how I will afford it.
And is that direct debit, or do you pay bi-monthly, or do you pay right on a meter?
I put in the meter readings and I pay like that. I do keep a track. I've got a little four-year-old. You know, he might go up and turn on the bath with a hot tap, and that's £20 down the drain. So, I check it quite regularly.
And yourself?
We put £60 on a week, and that doesn't even last a full week. Like, put it on a night time, and that only for an hour, because it runs out straight away. If you put a £10 on, it only lasts here a day. If you've done the dishes, your bath, and then put your heating on for 20 minutes, half an hour, you've spent £10 already. I work full-time, you know, and my money literally doesn't go anywhere. Half of my bills are gas and electric, and it's absolutely extortionate.
Like last year, we just keep the heating on for less time, but we have wood-burning stoves that we can use to heat the place up, just coping.
We just live in a small house, a bungalow. We have a heater on what we need and cooking what we need, you know, so I haven't noticed any difference at all.
I bought a new build in 2017. At that point, we were paying anywhere between £90 and £120 a month for gas and electricity. With it being new build, it was energy efficient. In the last 2 years, we've seen our energy bill increase to about £300.
A month?
A month.
What kind of impact is that having on your finances, if that's not a stupid massive, question?
Massive impact. Along with it, our mortgage increases with the interest rates going up, along with the food increases with the, obviously, the cost of living crisis, everything's gone up. Our energy bills are causing a massive strain on our financial status.
People in Hexham speaking to Dan. Well, listening to that is Matt Cole. He's the founder of the Fuel Bank Foundation. That's a charity that helps people on prepayment meters with their energy costs. And Matt Cole, the price rise is quite small this week and prices are cheaper than this time last year. But are your clients struggling with the cost like those people in Hexham?
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. You know, the stories we heard from the folk in Northumberland are exactly the same as the stories we hear from across our Fuel Bank network, across all four corners of the UK.
I mean, you help people who have prepayment meters, and I suppose the problem for them is particularly they can't spread the cost of winter over the whole year, can they? How are you coping with the demand then you're getting for help?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the challenge when you do prepay is that the majority of your energy costs are lumped into those four winter months. And in fact, we looked at Fuel Bank. People who prepay typically spend £250 more than their neighbour who pays by direct debit just to keep warm over winter, just because they're having to continue to top up top up, and we're seeing that come through. You know, our demand is higher than it ever has been at the moment. You know, we're seeing people need help week in, week out. They're just really struggling.
And what can you do for them?
So we do two things. We top up meters to get the lights back on again, to get the gas flowing, and then we use that period of respite to have a conversation about the additional forms of support they might be able to access, additional grants from maybe energy companies or local councils, to make sure that people are getting everything they possibly can get.
Yes, we talked about that a bit before Christmas, and that's the most important thing, isn't it? Go to the energy company because they have to do something, and some of them may even help you with the bill.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also really important to kind of do those things before the crisis happens. It's really hard to have that conversation if your lights are out, you know, really practical things. If you don't have electricity at home, you might struggle to charge your mobile phone. So speaking to your energy supplier before the problem happens is really, really critical.
Yeah, so anybody listening should do that if they fear they're not going to be able to afford things. The consultancy Cornwall Insight says energy prices will rise again in April. That's another 3% on top of this week's 1% rise. I know from April we're using less energy, but is that going to cause yet more difficulties?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of look back to yesteryear when people used to talk around, you know, a £1,200 energy bill being really excessive. I long for those days now. You know, our forecasting is the same as Cornwall's. Actually, we're expecting £1,700-£1,800 a year bills for the foreseeable future.
Now, one group we've spoken about a lot on Moneybox is the means testing of winter fuel payments for pensioners. That's the group. Only those who get pension credit have had that £200 or £300 this year. How is that affecting your older customers?
We saw a number of older customers getting in touch, kind of concerned around how they could access pension credit and how you needed to get pension credit to then access winter fuel payment. To be fair, you know, the government extended the time period that people had to apply for pension credit in. I think the largest area of concern actually is for those people who don't receive pension credit but are still in a really, really low income. So they fall the wrong side of the line, and so therefore they're not getting support with winter bills when in previous years they would have done.
Yes, they're just above the line, aren't they? There is, of course, the £150 warm home discount, which goes to a slightly bigger group, doesn't it? That's off one electricity bill organised by your energy company. And, of course, the government is, as you say, trying to help people get pension credit. Is there more to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been talking to the government about how we make sure that crisis support is there for people who are genuinely in a crisis, who are unable to keep the lights on, to keep the gas flowing, because we hear, you know, day in, day out, you know, some of the coping strategies that people are adopting. You know, they're turning the heating right down. You know, I was talking to a family in Telford a couple of weeks ago, you know, that they'd taken their heating down to 12 or 13 degrees.
And that's really not healthy, is it?
No, it's not healthy at all. Not healthy at all.
And with the turmoil in the world, which affects so many oil and gas producing countries, sadly, have we simply got to get used to higher prices, find a way to let people cope with this?
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. And that's the key, really, that we can't kind of hope that prices are going to come down. You know, if they will come down potentially at some point in the future, but we're stuck in this era now of high energy prices.
Matt Cole, Fuel Bank Foundation, thank you very much. Now, from New Year's Day, the fees private schools charge parents are subject to VAT at 20%, ending a 50-year exemption. The Independent Schools Bursars Association told Moneybox that schools are raising fees this term by between 13 and 18%, though some are absorbing the whole cost, it says, while others are raising fees by the full 20%. The government told us the new tax will raise £1.8 billion a year, which it says will help recruit an extra 6,500 teachers for state schools. But for some parents, of course, the increase will be hard to find, including Samantha. Her son is a boarder at a performing arts school. He gets a scholarship and a bursary, which pay most of the fees, but she still has to find £4,000 this term, several hundred more pounds more than before, even though the school is only passing on half the VAT rise.
We're paying 10% and the school are paying the other 10%. I mean, we've already used an inheritance, or part of an inheritance. We've used a pension and we've had help from grandparents. So just, you know, doing what we can. And to just pull him out now, we're lucky in the sense that he's only got another year and a half. So now we've got to just do the last push to get, you know, to get him through his A-levels.
Well, the Treasury says pupil numbers at independent schools have remained steady since the year 2000, despite fees increasing by around 75% in real terms since then. It says it's done a careful analysis with a costing mythology it's published, and from this, it and the Office for Budget Responsibility concluded that private school fees are expected to rise by 10% net as a result of the new VAT charge. Well, let's go live now to Rudolf Elliot Lockhart. He's chief executive of the Independent Schools Association. That represents 690 mainly smaller and specialist schools. Rudolf Elliot Lockhart, why should private school fees be exempt from VAT?
Well, education's always been exempt from VAT, so this is a new tax coming in. And I think the principle of exempting education from VAT is important. You know, I don't want to see, say, VAT on university fees. So I think it's an error to be introducing on school fees. But specifically, this is a tax that's going to hit parents. It's not a tax on schools. The schools are required to collect tax and have to pass it on in full to HMRC. So schools can't choose whether the parents pay or how much they pay.
Yes, we heard from Samantha, and I've seen her bills, and the costs there are rising 10%. I mean, the government says that should be the sort of average. As I said, the school is sharing the rise with her. How much will fees rise typically?
Well, I mean, you've heard from the Independent Schools Bursars Association about an average of between 13% and 18% being the impact of VAT, because schools are dropping their fees in many cases, so that once the 20% VAT is applied, the effect on parents is less than 20%. The trouble is there are other pressures here too. So employer national insurance contributions are going to be going up as of April, which will add about 2.4% to the average salary bill for a school. Charitable independent schools are losing business rates relief, which is going to add about £147,000 to the cost of an average independent school. We've already had the rise in employer contributions to teacher pensions last year. It was over 5 percentage points. And there's all the regular effects of inflation. We've just been talking about energy costs. Yes. That's a massive impact on schools as well. So that means that in September, I think we're going to see even more substantial fee rises, sadly, for the schools just to be able to keep their heads above water.
But schools can claim back the VAT they pay on things now, can't they? They couldn't before. Things like computers, desks, building work, going back some years. That will reduce the cost to them, won't it?
Well, that's one of the ways that schools are trying to reduce the impact of VAT. So, yes, you can reclaim once you've been VAT registered, VAT on capital expenditure from the last 10 years. Mm. But that means that it's the sorts of schools that have been spending lots of money on new facilities that are going to be best placed to make the savings. Whereas the smaller schools, the ones who haven't been spending lots, precisely because they're already operating on a really financially modest budget, they're the ones who won't be able to get these rebates. So what we're getting here is a policy that will hit the small and modest schools much harder than the large and already well-resourced schools.
Like your members. Stay with us, Rudolf. Well, let's hear from Francis Green. He's Professor at University College London's Institute of Education. He's a co-founder of the Private Education Policy Forum. He's looked at what adding VAT to fees will mean.
The real effect will be relatively small. It will be tangible. The best estimate suggests that over the course of 4 or 5 years, the numbers going to a private school will perhaps fall by about 35,000, maybe less, maybe a bit more. That has to be seen in the context of the fact that there are 550,000 or more children going to private school and, of course, 10 million children going to state schools. So if those 35,000 switch over from private schools to state schools, that won't make much of a dent in the state school population. I think the warnings about school closures have been exaggerated in the general public discussion. Of course, schools open and close all the time. There is a normal churn, especially of smaller schools opening and closing over time. And so when one particular school closes, it will be difficult to say whether it is because of this particular reason. There may be other reasons associated with the local school market and so on and so forth. The best estimate suggests that maybe if 30, 35,000 children do eventually switch, then that will be perhaps 100 odd schools fewer in 5 years' time. But that's a small number in relation to the total number of schools across the country.
So Rudolph, Professor Green studies these things and he says the effects will be relatively small. Do you accept that?
I think he's underestimating the impact this policy is going to have. And one of the problems we have with all of these sorts of analyses is that they always end up being based on averages across the sector. But what matters isn't what will happen to the mythical average independent school. We've got a sector where there are some more financially robust schools who've got parents who will be able to handle these increases, but many smaller local independent schools offering niche provision who are going to have parents who just can't afford the additional costs.
Yes,
that the government's
putting on them. We heard from Samantha how hard it is for her, but you know, a 10% rise, if that is the average, on a £15,000 a year typical bill, is that really unaffordable for parents? It's 30 quid a week for parents who can afford £15,000 a year.
I mean, I think it'll probably end up being a bigger rise than that. What we're talking about here is a huge one-year hike in fees. This is nothing like fee rises that we've had over the last 25 years or so. Now, yes, there will be some parents who can afford the higher fees. But for many, and we've heard from Samantha, it's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yes.
And I'm really worried. I'm really worried about them. I think that we've got a policy that's treating the whole sector as if it's the same. There are 2,500 independent schools in this country, and they're really varied. Most are small. They're offering this niche provision. I'm talking about special education or needs schools, schools serving very specific religious communities, performing arts schools, bilingual schools, all sorts of specialists. And it's the parents choosing these schools that, under the same financial pressures that everyone else is, they're going to really struggle with this additional VAT cost.
Yes, but you know, 94% of children go to state schools and the average spending is half that of private schools. And I'm sure a lot of listeners who can't afford private schools or choose not to use them will actually support this because the money, the government says, will be used to improve state schools. Just briefly, what's your response to that?
I think a lot of parents are going to be very disappointed to read stories in today's newspapers that highlight that the money raised by VAT here isn't going to be ring-fenced to be spent on education. So I've got real concerns that an already creaking state school system won't benefit from a single penny here,
okay.
But they will have to deal with an influx of new pupils pushed out of the independent sector. And I don't think parents are going to like that.
Rudolph Elliott Lockhart from the Independent Schools Association, thanks. Well, another rise from New Year's Day, catching the bus could cost you 50% more. Single fares on local buses in England, which had been capped at £2, may now cost up to £3, a £1 rise. Moneybox's Ema Devlin's here. Ema, why has the price gone up?
Well, Paul, the cap of £2 for a single journey was introduced in January 2023 by the previous Conservative government as a temporary measure to help with the cost of living crisis. It was extended several times, but was due to end in December. The new Labour government has said it is committed to the scheme, but the £2 cap didn't represent good value for taxpayers. So in the autumn budget, it announced the maximum price you can be charged for a single journey would rise to £3. That came into effect on Wednesday. That's the maximum. Some trips will be cheaper than £3, of course.
And some local authorities in England have decided not to put up the prices, haven't they?
Yes, some areas around England have already said that they'll be keeping the costs at £2 or less. So for many bus users in Manchester and London, the cap will stay the same until the end of the year. In Liverpool, it'll stay the same until September. And in West Yorkshire, prices will rise by only 50p from April. The money will come from their own budgets.
But in many places, they are going up. And if you take the bus to work and back every day, it could be an extra £10 a week. What's been the reaction to that?
Some campaigners say this would be a step too far for some bus users. Michael Solomon Williams is from the Campaign for Better Transport.
The risk, I suppose, is that if there are people who have really found the £2 fare cap very, very helpful in doing their vital journeys, if they're really adversely affected by this cap going up to £3, that's where we need to be worried. But actually, in most cases, the biggest impact has been in reducing, for example, £15 fares from Leeds to Scarborough, that's the most famous one, down to £2. That's still going to be only £3. So actually, the big reductions are still going to be in place. And what's really important, actually, is to say that this might make the case for day rider tickets and week tickets, which in many cases aren't changing. So actually, it's quite a complex picture. And I think we need to keep an eye out on how things evolve in the coming months.
And Ema, what's the government said about this change?
The Department for Transport said it is providing more than £150 million to help fund the cap this year, and that the extra money raised will help support travel in rural communities and towns where there is a heavy reliance on buses. and ministers said the £3 cap will still save some passengers up to 80% on some routes.
Thanks, Emma. People over pension age can still travel free on local bus services, of course, if they get a bus pass. And this change only applies to England. Transport policies are devolved to Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Oh, thanks, it's lovely, but you shouldn't have. Was that your Christmas? And did you go on to say, no, you really shouldn't have because I don't like it, or it's not my size, or, well, it is lovely, but I've already got one. So how can you take or send unwanted gifts back? And do you get a replacement, a credit note or a refund? With us is consumer expert Helen Dewdney of thecomplainingcow.co.uk and author of How to Complain. Helen Dewdney, what are the rules then? I've got this Christmas present, I don't like it or it doesn't fit. What can I do?
Well, the main thing to remember is that the consumer rights are going to lie with the person that has paid for the item. So it'll be great if you've got a gift receipt, because then that means that the store will take the item back and will likely give you a refund or an exchange. But if you haven't got that, you're not likely to get anything.
No, unless you fess up, of course, and say, well, I didn't really like it. Now, you say get a refund or an exchange, but what are your rights? I mean, supposing you bought it, OK, you bought something, you take it back to the shop. What are your rights?
Well, in store, it will be down to the traders, the retailers' terms and conditions, because unless it's a breach of the Consumer Rights Act 2015 and it's faulty, didn't last a reasonable length of time, didn't match the description, not a satisfactory quality, then it would be deemed as a change of mind. And that will be very much down to the traders' terms and conditions, although that's different online, of course.
Yeah, so they might give you your money back, or they might give you a credit note, or they might swap it, something like that. What about online, though? Because you do have more rights if you, or indeed your relative, bought it online.
Absolutely. You've got 14 days from when the item arrived to tell them that you're going to send the item back, and 14 days in which to do so. But if you have had, say, somebody has sent you an item straight from the retailer, it may be that you've got a gift receipt in there, or you've got an invoice without the amount that says this is for a gift. So it may be worth checking that and being able to check with the company whether you can exchange or get a refund.
Yes, hope you didn't throw it away with the Christmas paper.
Yes.
And what, from the other side, supposing that you sent someone a gift online and maybe you wanted it to arrive obviously before Christmas and it didn't get there till the 28th or maybe just vanished, what are your rights then?
Your contract is always with the retailer, so you don't go to the courier, whatever you might be told by the retailer if they're trying to fob you off. But if you've paid for a named delivery or within a certain length of time and it hasn't come, you will be entitled to that amount back, that postage back, and a full refund. So it will depend on their terms and conditions. If they've said that your item will arrive within 5 days and it didn't, you have got every right to return it if it, you know, eventually arrives. If it hasn't arrived at all, then you will be entitled to a full refund from the retailer.
Yes, but of course, because if it's online, you're entitled to send it back, as you said, if you give them notice within 14 days anyway, aren't you? So regardless of
whether you are, but you might have to pay the return postage. So for change of mind, the company's terms and conditions may be that if you're sending it back, you may have to pay that return postage. But if they're in breach of contract by not sending it on the date that you paid for, then it would be a breach of the Consumer Rights Act and you wouldn't pay the return postage.
Now, the sales have started. They started before Christmas, I think. Are your rights the same if you buy something in a sale?
Absolutely. You might well hear that they're not, but they are. The only times you might find that it's something a little bit different is that under the Consumer Rights Act, things have to match the description. But if they've pointed that fault out at the point of purchase, so they've said, you know, this jumper is reduced because it's got an X mark on it, you would not be able to take it back and say it's a breach because of that mark, because it was pointed out at the point of purchase.
Now, you've explained all that very clearly, of course, but what if the seller just disagrees and says no? Very briefly.
You point out the Consumer Rights Act 2015 and you say, under this act, I am entitled to the money back. And if you don't give it to me, I'm going to go to the small claims court. And then you write to the CEO using ceoemail.com to get the address, and you send a screenshot of the small claims court application.
Perfect. Helen Jude, near thecomplainingcow.co.uk. Thanks very much. So, a busy week ahead for some with all those gifts, but not too busy, I hope, to listen to Moneybox Live. The next programme on the podcast is from a care home in Sheffield. The government has announced it will appoint a commission to look into paying for care. Yeah, that is another one. So, Felicity Hannah will be finding out firsthand from residents and their families how they're managing the costs now and talk to the care home boss about the challenges that care homes face. You can send us your New Year money problems and solutions. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk or send us a voice note on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. 03306 783 183. We do read them all and you might get on the show. In this podcast, the team was Dan Whitworth, Catherine Lund, Emma Smith and Ema Devlin. Studio manager, Ethan Connolly Forster. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, The Great Survivor.
I'm Michael Gove and in a new series for Radio 4, I'll be discussing how to survive politics. I'll be joined by fellow politicians to discuss how politics really works.
It is only because of your principles that it is worthwhile.
We'll be talking about how to build alliances.
You're all trying to make the world a better place, and you have quite a lot in common.
How to cope with being unpopular, and how to stick to your principles when things get tough.
Faith, family and friends are very important.
Has there been a time when you felt betrayed? Do you think you've ever done the betraying?
Surviving Politics with me, Michael Gove. Find it on BBC Sounds in the Politically feed.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.